Listen to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. That was Tom Waits with Spidey's Wild Ride off of his Orphans album. And I'm super excited because the new Spider-Man movie is coming out in a couple of days. Actually, in literally a couple of days, because it'll be out on Tuesday, and today is Sunday, and so that will be Monday, and then Tuesday, and it'll be out. And I'm very excited, as you can tell. I think there's going to be a lot of similarities between this Spider-Man movie and the Sam Raimi first Spider-Man movie, but I don't know. Like, I saw the preview for Spider-Man and Batman back-to-back. I can't remember. I think it was for the Avengers movie. It was opening. They did the previews for it at the opening of the Avengers movie. And I was just like, Batman was first, and I was just like, meh, I don't know. This doesn't really excite me that much. And I like Batman. I like Batman a lot. It's not like I'm anti-Batman. Batman's my favorite DC character, right? But then when I saw the Spider-Man one, I was just like, oh my god, my chest is pounding. That looks so amazing. Oh my god. Oh wow. And so I got to see it in 3D, and it's going to be wicked awesome. There's also a bunch more news that I have for you, but we've got to get right into the show because there's not a lot of time to talk about all the many, many things I want to talk about, and I don't want to leave you guys hanging. Today's show is about Marvel Alternative again. I know, you're probably super bored of it by now, and I assure you this will be the last time I do this, at least for another couple of years, anyways. But the thing is the whole impetus behind this episode, this show, was that in 2000, Marvel Comics offered Joe Quesada editor-in-chief position, and he had done really well by them with his Marvel Knights line that he started in 98, and he brought a lot of success to Marvel after they were facing bankruptcy, and so they were just kind of like banking on this independent underground guy to bring more fans to the fold, and he did. It's crazy. Not only did he bring a bunch of weird alternative comics like artists like Ed Brubaker and Brian Michael Bendis and, you know, people you would never expect to do Marvel Comics, like Neil Gaiman at one point did Marvel Comics. It was bizarre, but he did it, and they came, and he did a whole bunch of different things with Marvel. Like, he did the Ultimate reboot line that was, like, introducing the characters to a whole new generation of fans who had gotten into these characters by watching the movies. He got rid of the whole comic book rating system for Marvel Comics and implemented this sort of movies rating system. But then, and so, like, for the last 3 weeks, I've been talking about some of my favorite Marvel comics and why they're my favorite and the artists involved and the writers involved and how awesome they are. And this is the last one. But the thing about this episode that's very interesting is that in 2009, Walt Disney bought Marvel. And so, like, for $4 billion, they owned it. And it's kind of scary because Disney owns a lot of things that I love, and I find it really upsetting because they're bastardizing them. Anyways, the thing is I also find it a little scary that they're monopolizing a lot of things that little kids love. You know, they've got a stranglehold on the market of boys and the market of girls. If it's not Disney princesses, it's Cars. If it's not Cars, it's superheroes. If it's not superheroes, it's, you know, the latest Pixar movie about a feminist Scottish girl. So, like, the thing is I just find it really unsettling and unsettling. It's unsettling. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about how, even though Disney took over in 2009, every so often there's, like, amazing comic coming out from Marvel. And, like, amazing artists. There's a lot of artists that are working with them right now that are either, like, Argentinian or Spanish or, like, I don't know, Serbian. And you're just like, where do these people come from? They're so amazing, and I'm so glad Marvel's actually letting them do comics in their own style. Because that's another big thing about Marvel, is Marvel, as much as I love it, and I'm sure I've mentioned to you, I feel like I'm a Marvel masochist because I keep going back for more. They do have a lot of hacks in their roster. And I mean, it makes sense because they've got to churn stuff out once a month, and they've got to churn a lot of stuff out once a month. And so, like, I'm not begrudging the fact that there's some crappy comics out there that Marvel's putting out. It has to happen. It's the law on averages. They've been around since the 40s. But at the same time, there are some really amazing comics. So let's talk about them. Okay. Because we don't have loads of time. I wanted to mention Ariel Olivetti is this crazy awesome cartoonist who's like he's gorgeous, his stuff. And he actually was the first cartoonist to get me to buy Punisher. I bought Punisher War Journal about 10 or 11 issues I bought because Ariel Olivetti was illustrating them. He was also did Namor, the First Mutant, with these gorgeous covers by Jay Lee, and they're just both really gorgeous. When you look at the covers and then you open the books, it is on level. It's not like a lot of times Marvel, they'll have like this gorgeous cover and then it'll be just like, oh my god, this doesn't even translate into the book. This is so bad, this art. But Ariel Olivetti, he is someone you can definitely bank on if you're looking for comics, trashy comics, brain candy that are beautifully, beautifully illustrated. He's been doing a lot of stuff for Marvel, lots of miniseries, lots of crossovers, but my two favorite things that he's done thus far is the Namor First Mutant series and the Punisher War Journal series. Plus, the Punisher War Journal stuff is actually really funny. It's written by Matt Fraction, and he's a pretty funny guy. He's a good writer. And the Namor stuff is pretty cool because he's an interesting character in the sense that, you know, he's like this bitter, angry super prince who used to, like, be the ruler of a whole group of people underwater that was never meddled with by humans, and now he's got to deal with humans and he's got to be civil and he doesn't have his world anymore. So it's very fascinating and good read. Good read, Namor. And I'm going to talk more about Namor too, because that's the thing. A lot of these people, they do, like, their little one-shot stories. And it has, like, it's not part of any kind of Marvel continuity, which is also really nice. You don't have to worry about reading back issues or forward issues, if you, so be it. But the thing is, like, you can just read them, enjoy them, and they're great. And one of the guys, actually, that, speaking of Namor, we might as well go to it, is Asad Ribic, is this amazing artist who, jeepers, when did I first see his stuff? Oh, gosh, I can't remember. I'm going to have to tell you in a minute. He did... The best thing I'd ever seen him do was this Loki and Thor miniseries called Blood Brothers. And it came out in 2009. And he has this amazing, gorgeous sort of painter style, too. And it's very similar to Ariel Olivetti's, actually. I got to give credit where credit's due. Most of it's the palette. They have the same kind of color palette, where it's like this weird sort of vintage pastel. It's hard to explain. It's murky, but it's pale, but it's... I don't know. Anyways, so Thor and Loki was this great story about how, like, Loki is just basically bitter all the time about how he's always second best. And for once, he wants to rule. And he ends up ruling. And then everything goes to crap. And then it's all about how Thor bests Loki to save the world, like usual. Or, I guess, Asgard, really. But anyways, it was written by Robert Rohde, which was great. They actually, in 2011, did an animated series, which was really bizarre because it wasn't really, like, an animated series per se. It was more like like a motion, one of those motion comics that they've been doing. And I kind of find them purposeless because it's like I'd rather just read the comic book. You know what I mean? Like it just seems really odd that they would do these things. But it's a big normal thing that they've been doing for a while. And well, let's continue to talk about Asad Ribic. He's this Croatian cartoonist who's been doing lots of stuff. Oh, yeah, The Four Horsemen from Vertigo, which was also written by Robert Ruddy in 2000, was the first time I saw him. Okay, see, I gotta, you know, jog my memory. Sometimes I forget stuff. So he did this Loki Thor Blood Brothers, which was excellent. And he also did this Submariner the Depths, which is also about Namor. And it was so much fun to read. It was written by Peter Milligan, who has been a stalwart in writing really eerie and cool comics within the DC and Marvel universe for a long time. We were talking about him a couple weeks ago because he had Ecstatics. He's great. And so the Submariner story is really creepy, but it's like a comic book because it's all about how there's like this legend of the Mariner and nobody really believes it. And so this doctor is going down in his little submarine. He's like determined to prove that the Mariner doesn't exist. But then of course the Mariner shows up, of course, not after he's killed a bunch of people. And so it becomes really scary and creepy and it's all underneath the water, the depths. But Asad Ribic is such a fantastic painter. I like anything he does, I usually end up buying. And a little bit of nerd trivia for you, if you care, is I'm almost positive because I've met Alex Maleev that the model used for the doctor in Submariner is Alex Maleev. But that's just my personal opinion. I'm pretty sure. And that's this other thing about Asad Ribic. And it kind of bugs me because I like Alex Maleev. He started in Daredevil. We're going to talk about him in a minute because he's doing Spider-Woman. But he so obviously uses models. It gets really annoying. And I know that Asad Ribic also uses models. But it's just imbued with so much of his own style and his own character. The art that you don't even care. I don't care. I don't care that he uses models at all. It doesn't bother me in the least. But when you make it obvious, like Alex Maleev, for example, it starts to get a little annoying. So I'll give you a perfect example. A few minutes ago, we were just talking about Spider-Woman, and this was pretty cool because what happened with the Spider-Woman, it came out in 2009, and the reason why this was exciting is because they coincided it with one of the motion comics that I was just talking about, where it's basically a comic, but it moves. It's not really animated, and again, I really don't see the point. I'd much rather have the book, and if you bought the hardcover, you get like the little DVD of the motion comics, so you're not really missing anything. But that's, I thought it was pretty cool. It was available on iTunes for like the first time ever. It was a huge thing. And the actual comic itself is really interesting because Bendis really loves Spider-Woman. When I talked to him when he first started with Marvel and I asked him what he wanted to do the most, he was like, all Spider-Woman, Spider-Woman, Spider-Woman. But it took him until 2009 to get this story off the ground. Of course, she had a big role in the whole Skrull invasion thing that was happening that year. So, of course, they were all like, yes, please do a Spider-Woman miniseries. And it was all about the history of Spider-Woman. And Maleev is a really good artist. He has these great textures in his inking style. It's very computer stylish, though. Like, you can tell it's just one of those patterny things. And like I was saying earlier, he's really, really dependent on models. And he makes it really obvious, which is why I didn't have a good time reading Scarlet, which was his miniseries that he did with Bendis on his own. But the Spider-Woman is a lot of fun. It reminds me a lot of, like, those kind of movies like Salt with Angelina Jolie. And, you know, it's just the cross, the double cross, the triple cross is actually something I kind of expected to be written by Brian Azzarello, but it wasn't. It was written by Brian Michael Bendis, a different Brian, a good Brian. They're both good Brians. What am I saying? Anyways, Spider-Woman was cool, and like I was saying earlier, is that it was an interesting time for Marvel 2009 because they were doing some really interesting things that not a lot of people were doing at the time. So anyways, blah, blah, blah. Let's go to some more music. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. I'm going to play some Joe Satriani for you because he did a song called Surfing with the Alien, which is all about the Silver Surfer. And I think, because my memory is terrible, so I'm just saying when we get back, I'll tell you for sure. I think Asad Ribic did a Silver Surfer comic too. Or maybe that's Tang and Hoot. But I'm going to talk about it as soon as we get back. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, Joe Satriani, Surfing with the Alien. Silver Surfer! We'll be right back.
dumpling. There's something wrong with you.
Hey, this is the K-Man. Tune in to CJLO.com on Friday nights from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. for Beyond That Graveyard 3. And start your weekend the right way, always. You love it, you need it. Beyond That Graveyard Part 3 on CJLO.com.
Bellevue, that's it. I mean, sometimes you just ain't all there.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And you were just listening to Joe Satriani, Surfing with the Alien. Because I was right, I'd forgotten. But you know me and my memory, it's there sometimes. Sometimes it's not there. But basically my point was, he said Ribic, before he did that Submariner Depths book I was telling you about, he did Silver Surfer Requiem, which was written by J. Michael Straczynski in 2007. And it was sublime. It was all about the death of Silver Surfer. It was heartbreaking. And it was really surprising, actually, because while I have established that Robert Roddy is an excellent writer and Saverbert works a lot with him and does a lot of great things with him, at the same time, I have to say J. Michael Straczynski is a terrible writer, and it's very rare that I find something that he does that I like. But anyways, he did do a really good Silver Surfer comic. And then afterwards, Ribic worked with Peter Milligan, who is awesome. Now, we're going to talk about a bit more about some other cartoonists who worked with Marvel. First one I wanted to talk about quickly was... In 2005, they started to capitalize on what was popular at the time, because Marvel has a really bad habit of doing that. Like, about 3 years ago, they were doing the whole vampire thing in the Marvel Universe. They're like, X-Men vampires, Jubilee became a vampire, which is really retarded. But before that, in 2005, it was like the whole Marvel zombie thing, because zombies are hot. And thankfully, they did get Robert Kirkman, the writer who does Walking Dead, to write the series. And initially, it was just ridiculous. It was illustrated by Sean Phillips, who's been doing a lot of stuff for Vertigo, currently doing a lot of work with Ed Brubaker on Marvel's his independent stuff like Femme Fatale. But the thing is like he has a real Vertigo style. Like it's really kind of like wobbly and messy, but still, you know, they're definitely not something you'd expect to see from Marvel. But you know, Marvel, like I was saying, they're getting guys like Ted McKeever to do Doctor Strange comics, and they're getting Sean Phillips to do things too. So anyways, this Marvel Zombies was totally irreverent, absolutely hilarious, and a lot of fun. Basically, the virus goes around and it becomes this big sort of gladiator battle between all the Marvel characters as they, the ones that aren't zombies battle the ones that are zombies, and it was so funny. Things like Captain America's brain sloshing out, Giant Man keeping Black Panther as his prisoner so he can munch on him at will whenever he's feeling a little peckish, you know. So there was a lot of funny things in it. So that was a really great series, the Marvel Zombie series. Now, at the same time, they're getting all these interesting European cartoonists to get do work for them. Like, for example, one person I wanted to mention was Gabriel D'Otto. He had been doing a lot of stuff for Marvel, like things like the X-23. He did Sex and Violence, which was like Domino and Wolverine. But the one thing that he did that was really, really great, and of course was written by Brian Michael Bendis, was their revamp of the Secret Wars. Now, actually, I shouldn't say it was like a revamp. It was more of like the sequel. It was the fallout of the original Secret Wars that came out in the early 80s, and when Spider-Man got his black costume. But this was more about like how Fury went around mind-wiping everyone, and everyone got pissed off when they started to realize that they went away for this big battle and didn't remember anything about it. It came out in 2002, and the thing about D'Otto is that he too is one of those amazing sort of painters that you expect to see his work in Heavy Metal magazine, never, ever, ever in a Marvel comic. So it, like, it's action-packed, it's exciting, there's lots of things going on, and obviously he uses models too, because Angelina Jolie is Sharon Carter for some reason. Or no, what is her name? Maria Hill. Angelina Jolie is Maria Hill for some reason. But, I mean, if you like any of those kind of crazy-ass team-ups, you know, like the Avengers and stuff, Secret War is worth getting, and Brian Michael Bendis is always a fantastic writer. He does a good job, usually. I mean, sometimes he doesn't. There's things that he's done that I'm not a huge fan of, but there's lots of things he's done that I love. So the next one I want to talk about quickly is Simon Bianchi. He's been doing a lot of stuff for DC as well as Marvel. He's an Italian cartoonist who, I guess, got to start doing European versions of the Marvel comics. Now, his style, one of the things I bought of his that I really liked that he did for Marvel was Thor. He was doing some great stuff for Thor, but it was really different because it was really sketchy. Does that make sense? It was like half half there and half not there, and he'd have all these crazy stuff, things happening in the background. He has this really sort of gothic Celtic style, you know, like it's just a lot of symbolism, a lot of empty space, a lot of positive and negative playing. He's done so many different things. Like, first thing I saw that he did was the Seven Soldier series by Grant Morrison, where I was also first introduced to Fraser Irving as an illustrator, who has also gone on to do a bunch of stuff for Marvel. It's just fascinating where these artists come from, and the fact that Marvel's using them. I'm so in love with it, and I'm happy that they use these guys. Another one I wanted to mention was Paulo Rivera. He's a painter, and he has been doing this whole series with Marvel called the Marvel Mythos. And he started in 2006, and he's done about six of them. And there was an X-Men, a Hulk, a Ghost Rider, a Spider-Man, a Fantastic Four, and a Captain America. I only purchased a few of them because it starts to be the same old thing. And in fact, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale did the same sort of thing too with their Spider-Man blue and Daredevil yellow and Hulk green. But the thing is Paulo Rivera is a painter. He's a painter. He's not like a cartoonist at all. And so if you look at his Mythos series, they're gorgeous. They're stunning. They're works of art. He could have a huge secondary career selling his stuff. He probably does, actually. What am I talking about? But my point is that these stories are really great jumping on points if you're curious about the character and you want to know like where they came from, like, well, how did the Hulk become the Hulk? How did Ghost Rider become the Ghost Rider? And they're so beautifully illustrated that they're something you can give to your mom or your grandma and they would be like, oh, this is pretty. And I always wondered why Spider-Man could climb walls. It's just one of those things. They'd love it. Okay, anyways, we should go to some more music and then we'll have some news. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. Today we're talking about Marvel Alternative in the sense that they use really weird artists sometimes. And I love it. I'm not dissing it. I totally love it. But at the same time, I'm continually shocked by it. And actually, I just remembered one right now. I almost forgot about Seth Fisher. Sadly, because he died. But he did this really awesome Fantastic Four miniseries. So he deserves a mention. Anyways, okay, blah, 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 music. This is called Rely on Hawkeye. It's by a group called Mandalay Victory. We're getting into the metal portion of today's show. CJLO 1690.
Yeah.
and you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. That was Mandalay Victory with Rely on Hawkeye. You know him. He was in the movie of the Avengers, so you cannot feign stupidity. Anyways, let's do news because there's lots of stuff happening. Okay, first of all, I have a teeny tiny mini rant because I was so angry yesterday. All right, so the Jazz Fest is happening right now, and I'm going to go see Larkspawn, which is on Wednesday, and I think I've already bitched about the fact that it's on at midnight, which is kind of ridiculous, but whatever, you know, it'll be a good show because he's awesome, and apparently he's doing some kind of James Brown tribute. So I took Thursday off, which is weird. Who takes Thursday off? At least I'll get my proper amount of sleep. And as well, I wanted to mention that Escort's playing Tuesday for free at 9:30, and Maestro Fresh West is playing for free on Friday at 10, and Chromeo is playing for free at on Saturday at 9:30, which I think is pretty awesome. And tonight, I'm going to go see Ghostbeard and Ghislaine Poirier do their little Sudwest show at midnight, because I get tomorrow off. All right. Anyways, my rant is this. So I go to buy the Larkspawn tickets. You can buy them online if you have a credit card. Don't have a credit card, can't buy them online. Online, they mention that there's a price for if you buy them now, and then there's a different price if you buy them the day of the show. Okay, I understand getting penalized if you are lazy and you're getting your ticket the day of the show. What I don't understand is I was penalized, and they don't mention this on the website at all, because I actually went to the venue to buy my ticket. I got charged more money because I went to the venue, bought the ticket in advance. But because I wasn't using the internet, I had to pay extra like $4. And I was like, that is ridiculous. And I was angry. So I had to share that. Because I think, and also, you know, I went to Cheap Thrills to buy the tickets initially. And Cheap Thrills hardly had any tickets for the Jazz Fest, which is disappointing because I like to support the small business. But then the guy at Cheap Thrills had the nerve to tell me, oh, don't buy them online. It's more expensive if you buy them online, which was completely the exact opposite. So I'm like, did you lie to me? You're a dink. Anyways, I wanted to mention that Cinema Beaubien, starting June 23rd, which has already passed, every Saturday and Sunday from 10 o'clock in the morning, you can go and see a bunch of films for children only and animation, and it's all free. It's for kids. It's going to be awesome at the Cinema de Beaubien. And also, what else did I want to mention? There's so much news. There's like a puppet show that's playing right now. I had to actually go to the Gazette to get all my information. The Theatre Dame de Cour presents Le Profite de Mouffette throughout the summer. The tickets are expensive. Oh, they're like $40 for adults and $20 for kids. But they're it's at, they don't even tell you where it is. What's the point? It's the outdoor theater, and they've got a picture of these puppets, and it looks pretty amazing. They're super huge, and the story is about a pregnant woman returning to her late grandfather's garden to unlock a chest full of memories. It looks pretty exciting, actually, and you know how I like to support Muppets and Puppets. Speaking of Muppets and Puppets, the Comedy Festival is happening right now, not for a while, actually. I went to the Just for Laughs Festival, and I discovered website, and everything I want to see is happening like in the last week of the month, but that's okay because I've managed to cull it to the best of the best. And while I was on the website, I had to go and look through stuff to see if there was anyone I wanted to interview, and there were four new comics that I've discovered because of that website that are hilarious. And so if you're bored, look up Sam Simmons. He's hilarious. There's a Canadian guy named Glenn Wool who is really funny. You know, I love Deanne Smith. I already talked about her last year, but she's also at Just for Laughs this year. And Darcy Michael is a new one that I never discovered before, who's also Canadian, like Glenn Wool. And Daniel Sloss is this young British, and when I mean not young, I mean like 21, really young, comic who was quite funny. So yeah, if you're bored, check that stuff out. Also, I wanted to mention that this week in the paper, in tribute to Canada Day, the Gazette did this huge article on Canadian cartoonists, political cartoonists specifically, and I think that was excellent, whether they'd done covers for The New Yorker or some of the, like, an interview with Aslan, Terry Mosher, which I thought that was fantastic. As a comic book nerd, I was so excited to see that. And let's see, what else did I want to mention quickly? Okay, last thing I want to mention is the last issue of Alan Moore's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen came out this week. It was 2009. It really finalized a lot of stuff. It's kind of harsh to read, actually. I was like, what? No, huh? Oh! You know, so, but anyways, it was still really an exciting tale, really well illustrated by Kevin O'Neill. Although one thing I wanted to ask, and I guess I gotta wait until the nerds get online and start talking about it more, but I swear to God, every panel that has, like, no main characters, but, like, peripheral characters, or, like, just people in the scenery and the cityscape, whether they're walking or whatever, they all looked very specifically drawn. So I'm wondering if, like, Kevin O'Neill was, like, drawing his friends in the comic, or maybe they're actual famous people that I'm having failure to recognize, I don't know. But then the weirdest thing happened is, like, yesterday the same thing happened again when I was watching The End of Paul, which is, like, the latest Simon Pegg movie, the last Simon Pegg movie about an alien. And I, like, was watching, and then I realized that almost everything Jason Bateman was saying in that movie was a movie line. And so I'm like, oh, now I gotta go check it out and see if all these people doing weird secret Easter eggy things in their shows and their comics. I think that's cool, though. I'm not, like, dissing it. I think it's neat. Anyways, what else did I want to tell you? Oh, and okay, so speaking of Simon Pegg, I put this on Twitter, so if you follow me on Twitter, just ignore what I'm going to say. But the thing is, I found this online and it was so funny that I have to share it with you guys. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost decided to do the entire Star Wars movie themselves, but they only got to, like, the first scene, and then they were, like, fighting about the whole thing, and it's so funny. So just YouTube it. It's old. It was when they were doing Paul. Just YouTube Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Star Wars, or just Simon Pegg, Star Wars, and you'll see it. It's so, so funny. And then I found this clip that is, like, hilarious too, and it's too bad I already did my Star Wars show. I would have played it, but they took that Gautier song, Somebody That I Used to Know, and they turned it into the Star Wars That I Used to Know, and the video is clever, and the lyrics are very apropos, and if you're a big Star Wars nerd like me, and you're a little bitter that George Lucas sucks so hard, then you might want to check this out. And it was really funny. Actually, I've been in this weird sort of Star Wars universe for, like, the last week or so, but anyways, Star Wars, we love you. And should we go to another track? Yes, we will. Let's play this song. This song is called Ego, the Living Planet, one of the main baddies in Marvel. Well, not one of the main, one of the peripheral baddies, let's say that. This is Monster Magnet, and you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. We'll be right back. And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And that was Monster Magnet with Ego, the Living Planet. And today we're talking about the Marvel Alternative, and like usual, we're running out of time. So let's get really cracking, because I just decided right this instant that I'm not going to cover the big summer blockbuster things they did that I liked. We'll do that another show. Next week I'm going to do Hellboy. Sorry. That's just the way it is. Now, I wanted to quickly mention Kari Andrews, who's a Vancouver cartoonist who's really, really good, who does various styles. Like, I'm always amazed by what he's doing. One of the first things he did was in, like, the early 90s. It was, let's see here, do I get a date? Oh, sorry, 2000. He did this Ben Grimm and Logan, and it was, like, before they became Fantastic Four and Wolverine thing. And it was his style initially, because he was, like, working for Image at the time, is very cartoony and super clean, super sort of Japanese animation without the big eyes and stuff. But then he's evolved. Like, he continually evolves. He's been doing tons of covers for Marvel, like some really good Hulk covers. He's been nominated for Schuster Awards like tons of times. He's done some great Wolverine stories, with one with Mark Miller that was all about World War II. Another one with Daniel Way that was about his time in Madripoor, Japan. Also, he started illustrating Astonishing X-Men last year with Warren Ellis. And, things like Storm's hair is just unbelievable. Looking at the White Queen, you're like, oh my God, how is that physically possible? And again, it's a totally different style from his earlier stuff. Like, he's amazing just because of his versatility. Kari Andrews, if you want to look for somebody who's really a really good cartoonist, a comic book artist who's like an I think that one of the best Marvel cartoonists, because like he's got the style down and he's doing different styles all the time. So it's like he's going above hack work, but at the same time, he's not like super painter or anything. He's just really good cartoonist. I've mentioned it quite a few times. Milo Manera finally did an X-Men comic like Bendis dreamed of in 2010. It was called X-Women, and it was Manera doing Kitty Pryde and Psylocke and Rogue and Storm, and it was a very gorgeous, fun jungle adventure, and they're all super sexy in the way that only Milo Manera can illustrate. Also fully painted in his watercolor style. And Nathan Fox did a story with Joe Casey called Zodiac During the Dark Reign series. And Nathan Fox has this really crazy style that's like Farrell Dalrymple, like definitely from the alternative, sort of reminds me a bit of Tom Fowler. Certainly not something I would expect to see with Marvel as well. Guys like, and who are huge in the 80s, are now back and they're doing Marvel comics. Guys like freaking Jason Pearson. What? I couldn't believe it. He's doing like Wolverine and Astonishing X-Men. He's all over the place. You know, dude, Pearson got to start doing Penthouse comics, okay? Like, I did not see that coming. Speaking of people I didn't expect Marvel to ever do comics with in their life, guys like David Lapham and Kyle Baker were doing Deadpool for a while there. It was Deadpool Max. It was coming out in 2000 and, I guess I would say 9, 10, 11, 12. Anyways, the thing is it's called The History of Violence, and Lapham, I did a show about him not too long ago. He did an amazing series called Stray Bullets, which is why I did the show about him, because he's also doing the Marvel Avengers X-Men crossover thing that's happening right now. And Kyle Baker has this really bizarro style that is like totally like Merry Melodies or Looney Tunes or like Tex Avery, and so it's totally appropriate that these two guys are doing Deadpool. Weirdly appropriate. And it made me buy a Deadpool comic. What the heck? Two other guys that should also continue to do superhero comics for Marvel because they're doing such a great job. We talked about Arthur Adams a couple of weeks ago because he's been around since the 80s, and he has this very gorgeous, super detailed style that is like certainly unlike anybody else's. Like, as soon as you see an Arthur Adams picture, you know it's Arthur Adams. And he's been doing Ultimate X, which was like a 5-issue miniseries, I believe. And then also Frank Cho, who was doing Liberty Meadows, which I didn't really like as much because I was just like, ah, so derivative and ah, it's not funny. But anyways, the thing is he's doing new Ultimates. And so he was born to do Marvel superhero comics. Again, it's like Kari Andrews. Frank Cho is not versatile, but what he does really well. He does sexy superhero babes that should be swinging through vines and jungles and pounding the crap out of each other. This one, New Ultimates, has like the female version of Thor. It's got Captain America. It's got Thundra and Kazar. It's got like Hawkeye. It's got all these really cool characters and a lot of battles. So, you know, if that's what you're into, those are the Marvel comics you should be looking for. I also mentioned Fraser Irving. He did the Iron Man series as well. He did this great story called Silent War with David Hein, which is about the Inhumans. Kelman Ondrovsky has been doing a lot of stuff for Marvel lately, whether it be Satana or the Dazzler Necronosha series. Daniel Aja has a really interesting style. He's been doing some Wolverine stuff, and he did the Immortal Iron Fist series. I also am totally loving Catherine Mohn's work, especially if she ever works with Sarah Pacelli or David LaFuente. LaFuente was doing the Ultimate Spider-Man series, the new revamp when the white young Spider-Man died and then the young black young Spider-Man took over. And all of them, they're just really fantastic artists. Daniel Acuna did a Black Widow miniseries. Dan Brereton did a Frankencastle issue with Garth Ennis. I was been mentioning Eric Kennett a lot of times. He's done a New Adventures Luke Cage series, as well as an Iron Man Enter the Mandarin series. I also quickly want to mention George Pratt did a Wolverine Natsuki series, where it was like this miniseries where Wolverine was a samurai. And Pratt, he's amazing. Like, he's done stuff for Darren Aronofsky. He's done just, he's really just not, again, what you'd ever expect from Marvel. Ryan Sick, who did a lot of stuff for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, started with X-Factor. Lately I've been reading Wolverine X-Men, because it's been illustrated by Nick Bradshaw, who's kind of like Arthur Adams, and Chris Bacalo, who's been around such a long time and been doing lots of great stuff. So there's still a little bit more to talk about, but I have to play an ad for you, and when we come back, we're going to do, like, anthologies. Yeah. All right, CJLO 1690 AM, hopefully you got a couple of names out of that massive blah, 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 and this is Entombed. They're singing the Wolverine Blues. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
And right now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you something new with modern music, where you can sit back and relax and take some of the wonderful things. We bring you, ladies and gentlemen, let's give them a big hand.
Let the rhythm hit them, CJLO 1690 AM. Check it out every Tuesday night, 8 to 9, for your hour of hip-hop.
And that was Entombed with Wolverine Blues. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show. We talk about all graphic arts all the time. And I just wanted to quickly go over some of the awesome anthologies Marvel's put out recently. In 2008, they started doing this series called Strange Tales. There was 4 issues of the first series, 3 issues of the second. And, oh my God, it was amazing. If you're a huge alternative comic nerd like me, you've got Stan Sakai, Pete Bagg, Paul Pope, Ivan Brunetti. Oh my God, within the pages, that was, it was amazing. Let's see, who else was in this one? Here, I gotta flip through them. Corey. Corey, oh, he's so good. And let's see, did I really see a Jeffrey Brown? Good God, there was a Jeffrey Brown. It's amazing. If you're really, like I said, a fan of alternative comics, if you can find Strange Tales, I'm pretty sure they collected them. I think The Impetuous was because Pete Bagg had done this great Hulk story, because he'd also done this awesome Spider-Man. That was, I totally forgot about it. But that's because we're not talking about Spider-Man. But like, Spider-Man gets old and fat, and then his next thing that he was going to do was Hulk. But when the Hulk movie was coming out, the first one with Ang Lee, it just didn't fit. And so they were like, kibosh, and it never got published. But in the original Strange Tales, it did. And you really have to look at these. They're so excellent. I mean, did you ever think Ivan Brunetti would do a cover for a Marvel comic ever? No, I didn't think so. Then they also did a series called Girl Comics, and this came out in 2010, and it was a big thing to promote the female creators and artists of Marvel Comics, as well as some of the characters. And so it was interesting, because not only did you get all these cool female cartoonists doing comics about their favorite female Marvel characters, or even male Marvel characters, but you also got like little synopsises on the history of some of the women that contributed to the Marvel Universe, whether it be Marie Severin, or Trina Robbins, or Ramona Fraiden. So the Girl Comics, there was 3 issues, and it showcased so many great people like Molly Crabapple, Devin Grayson, Louise Simonson, Amanda Connor, Jill Thompson, and it was basically like a labor of love to a certain extent. Of course, they got paid, but it was something that these women who'd grown up with Marvel Comics was very excited to do their favorite heroes and characters and short stories, and it was a lot of fun if you're like a female comic book fan, a fan of female cartoonists as well. And then the last thing I wanted to quickly mention was I Love Marvel, was this thing that came out in 2006, and it was supposed to coincide with Valentine's Day. There was a whole bunch of them, but I grabbed 2-3. And one was a series called My Mutant Heart, and the first one was My Mutant Heart, starring Wolverine, Cannonball, and Dupe. Then the other one was Marvel AI, which was like this love story between Scarlet Witch and Ultron, or no, not Ultron, sorry, Vision. And then there was also this Marvel Heartbreakers, which was, it was so good. The art was so good. And it was a one-shot, and they were like a lot of fun. They were cute and sweet and romantic, and there was lots of great artists working in them, and just really neat ideas by people you don't really see a lot in the Marvel Universe. So anyways, we're going to go to another track because we're out of time. But actually, no, we're not out of time. I just talk too fast, like usual. And I think I made my point. Marvel, even though I hate you sometimes, even though Disney now owns you, you still managed to make me come back and shell out the big bucks for your stuff, because you have a tendency to pick fresh new artists, and I have a tendency to fall for that. So there are some Marvel titles out there that are worth looking at for sure. There's a whole bunch that I haven't mentioned. Like, there was this great Red Hulk trade paperback you can get with some Arthur Adams and Frank Cho art in one package. I didn't even talk about my favorite summer events, which were like Civil War and House of M. Even the Skrull Invasion was pretty interesting. Marvel, I mean, they do the same thing as everybody else, but sometimes there's just something more going on and it's worth checking out. So, blah, 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 that's enough. No more talk about Marvel. The month of Marvel is over. Like I said, next week we're going to do Hellboy, because I love Hellboy and I haven't really talked about him in a long time. And I've watched all the movies recently and I'm rereading all the books and the comics, and the comics keep on coming, and there's so much more going on in the Hellboy universe that most people don't even know about. But anyways, what we're going to talk about now is the fact that it's Canada Day. Yay. And I'm proud to be Canadian. I'm very proud to be Canadian. I come from a military family. We traveled all over Europe as a kid because we lived in Germany. And one of the things that you come to realize is that they love Canadians. I mean, obviously, it's because we liberated a lot of them during World War II from the Germans. But the thing is they, like, you'll go to places in northern France and there will be Canadian flags flying everywhere. They will have huge floral displays that they've built of giant Canadian flags made out of flowers. You know, I mean, admittedly, this was the 80s, so it was a little bit closer to wartime than the aughts. But the thing is like, we would be getting free gas. They would give us free candy all the time because we were cute little Canadian children. Like, I was raised with a massive love for my country. And then when I lived in Sault Ste. Marie, we had to go to Vancouver, and I traveled across Canada with my father by car, and I just grew to love the country even more, because I think the variety in geography is just stunning. There's so much to see that makes this country so special. Now, the track that I'm going to play to symbolize how I feel about my country now is called "These Days Are Good" for the Canadian Conservative Youth Party Alliance from the Rio Statics, which I think is the quintessential Canadian band. There's lots of bands out there that are truly Canadian, you know, like Tragically Hip and OG Rush and the Guess Who. Like, I'm not saying even Trouble Charger and Avril Lavigne, all those guys, they're all Canadian, Justin Bieber, blah, blah, blah. My point is, though, is to me, in my opinion, personally, the Rio Statics will always be my go-to Canadian band that espouse true Canadiana and manage to sing about the variety and with great love of the country we're from. So this track is really appropriate because I'm so upset with Harper these days. I hope when we have our next election, things change. That's all I hope. Please, Canada, don't fail me now. But anyways, this track is off of The Night of the Shooting Stars. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This track came out in 2001, so it's kind of weird how appropriate it is. But hopefully you will enjoy it and have a great Canada Day celebration if you're bored this evening. Like I said, at midnight, it's Ghostbeard and Ghislaine Poirier doing an awesome set at the Sudwest event that they're doing. I don't know where. Just Google. Go look to the Montreal Jazz Fest site and you'll see it. It's at midnight. And half of you guys I know don't have to sleep in tomorrow or get to sleep in tomorrow, so do so. And I forgot to tell you one last thing. If you can find it, and they reprinted it, so it's not so hard to find, but there's this great comic that came out called Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe. It was 1995, written by Garth Ennis, illustrated by Doug Braithwaite, and it's hilarious because this group of people who've been destroyed by superhero fights have gotten together and paid the Punisher to kill every last superhero there ever was, and in the end, there's only one left, him. Does he kill himself? Or what? If you can find it, it's a lot of fun, and it's probably one of the best, most irreverent Marvel comics out there. All right! Here we go. These Days Are Good for the Canadian Conservative Youth Party Alliance by the Rio Statics. CJLO.
For us must be removed. things in place that will cure you, that will cure you. All these days could be good for you. When the sun goes down,